Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer.
Hey, DK.
Hey there.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, just waiting on Matt to get in.
Sounds good. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Awesome.
Hey, Matt.
Hey there. I just got to say, you guys have the best sounding podcast I think I've ever listened to. It's clear that you're gearhead. So it you know, you walk the walk. I'm here all week. What other compliments do you want me to dish out?
Well, see, I figure, and I kind of do this on purpose. I cannot let any audio problems or anything half rate go through if like we're supposed to be audio professionals, right? They can't, like, how are these guys calling themselves audio professionals and their podcast sounds like crap? You know,
there is a disconnect though. Like I work in video production and, you know, take my day job very seriously, but, you know, when it comes to my own content, sometimes I find myself, you know, slipping up occasionally because it's, you know, I'm just so used to doing it for the day job. And, you know, sometimes I think, oh, well, I'm doing it for the music. It's not my day job. I can, you know, let off the gas. And that's absolutely not true. You know what I mean? Like you gotta keep it up for both.
Right. Well, in some respect, this is, you know, kind of like content marketing for us. So
absolutely.
You know, once it's out there, people are listening to, hey, these guys are talking about, you know, recording and doing things well from your home, and yet they can't seem to get it together themselves. Kind of be like the last time you'd ever listen to us. So,
well, I am sure that is not happening based on, you know, I only got to listen to one episode, and it was on the recording guitars, which I found so fascinating. And just going back and looking at, you know, all the titles you guys have, I'm going to really sink my teeth into it. But I do have one main question though. Did the smoker get used today at all?
No,
that's my life.
Potentially, but Saturdays or Sundays are smoker day.
Oh, right, right.
I'm very envious of that.
Yeah, how did that happen? Because we usually record midweek, but there were, I guess, a period there where we were recording on weekends. Was that the case? I'm forgetting now.
Well, yeah, we were doubling up because I had system downtime and when my GPU fried on my computer.
Oh God, that's right. That's right.
And so we were making trying to catch up episodes up to get ahead again.
That's right. So
I forgot you had like 2 weeks without a computer.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's terrible. So sorry.
You might be interested in this coming Monday's episode. We had a woman by the name of Kristen Goshorn on, and she's in video post-production.
Oh, no way.
And she came on and talked about, she has a podcast and her whole topic area is about women in post-production. So we had a pretty cool chat with her.
Very cool. That's awesome. I will definitely be tuning into that. I might pass it on. I've got, you know, a woman who works for me actually, who's an absolute badass in editing, and definitely pass it along to her as well when it comes out.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Hey, let's do a quick 3, 2, 1 here.
Absolutely. So we count it down and then snap. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Perfect. It was all over the board.
It was the usual mess.
But it's crazy how it actually syncs up when you bring it all together.
Well, yeah. We've been doing this long enough that on the times that we forgot to do the snap, I was able to, just based on our normal conversational cadence, to line things up like exactly. So it was kind of funny. Anyway. Shall we get into it? You want to do a formal introduction? How do you want to do it?
Yeah. So everybody, welcome. We're pleased to have DK Lyons joining us today. DK, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Hot and sweaty. We're doing fantastic.
Fantastic. I love to hear it.
Fantastic. Doing fantastic.
So I'm really happy to have you on the show. And we wanted to kind of talk about what you have going on. I believe, I don't know the actual date, but you have an album that you recently released. And I know you've got some singles that are going around right now. And what was that, maybe like the end of June or beginning of July that you released?
Yeah. So my debut came out June 26th, independently released. We've been, you know, really hitting the ground with promoting. Obviously, you know, as you guys know, in the time of COVID, it's, you know, it's digital or nothing at this point. So,
right.
You know, me and my manager have really just been you know, constantly, you know, optimizing social campaigns, creating video content, you know, finding unique routes to try to get the word out about the music, you know, knowing that touring's not a thing right now, and, you know, just trying to find innovative ways to get all that hard work out there, you know, as you guys know, being, you know, in the thick of recording all the time, you know, I spent the better part of a year recording the album and, you know, working on a release plan and booking shows. And then obviously COVID hits and it kind of throws the plan A and plan B and, you know, plan C out the window. So you're kind of left to react to it. And, you know, it's just been constantly grinding and again, optimizing. I think that's been the key word for us ever since the album has come out.
Yeah. We like to use the word pivot.
That's a good word too.
Sometimes it feels like spinning. So
what does what this feels like, though, you know?
Yeah. What's the most kind of creative pivot that you've had to, that you've come up with your, now you have management and help, obviously, in lieu of the things that you had planned to do, what was something that you came up with that was new and innovative maybe?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can't take credit for really doing anything too out there, I don't think, but, you know, just really working on, you know, social and, you know, we found this kind of online platform that we've been building our campaigns in. You know, we're doing some native Instagram, you know, promotion, some native Facebook, a little bit of Google Ads, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, really fell in love with this one, you know, platform that has been able to optimize Spotify promotion, YouTube promotion. We're probably going to try out a SoundCloud campaign at some point, dude, just because, you know, from what we've seen in the past, you get really, really good cost per click. And, you know, it sounds crazy, an artist talking about, you know, this kind of more analytical side of things. But sure. As you guys know, in the modern era, it is all about your online presence. It's about building that social following, you know, getting people coming back and engaging with your content, not just once, but on a consistent basis. And, you know, what's really cool with all the targeting tools is, in today's day and age, you can be the most, you know, specific artist out there in terms of genre, but you can still find your audience, you know, just by playing the social game right, which has been really cool. But, you know, in addition to that, just finding ways to stay busy. You know, I'm a very, very type A personality. And, you know, if I'm not constantly making progress on things and adding projects to my plate, I go crazy. So, you know, spend a lot of time really working on the live sound for when the time comes. You know, really, I got a really cool, you know, pedal board, a processor, all in one kind of thing, and just really building out different amps for my different songs. You know, spending a ton of time just rehearsing in my mom's garage when I was home for a while. You know, working on recording just some cover demos. I'm not really, you know, the acoustic bedroom cover type. I'm mm-hmm. much more interested in recording, and, you know, I've got a lot to learn in that aspect, but it's been fun kind of, you know, making a list of covers I wanted to kind of take a stab at and taking a different spin on those covers. You know, working on an alt country version of Shut Up and Dance by Walk Nice. The Moon, or like an 80s synth pop version of Semi Charm Life by Third Eye Blind. So
I love that song.
It's been really a really cool project to sink my teeth into and really try to get creative with it. And, you know, at the same time, continue to hone that, you know, DIY recording process. You know, I worked in a studio with a producer who became, you know, one of my good friends and collaborators on my album, you know, very green to recording, and picked up a lot from him. You know, that's why I said I enjoyed listening to you guys' episodes, because, you know, I remember hearing some of the similar things about, you know, the way you process guitars and, you know, figuring out what the sound should be before you start recording versus, you know, kind of just recording it and adding effects right after. And, you know, just taking those lessons into my own DIY projects, it's definitely, you know, in hindsight, paid off. So, you know, that was a very long-winded way to say I've been trying to keep very busy, you know, amidst these difficult times, and just continue to make progress towards, you know, the ultimate goals.
Have you been exploring playing live through streaming or other mediums like that to keep in touch with your fans?
Yeah, you know, I actually was fortunate enough to do a couple of live shows back home at Massachusetts. I was home for about 4 months, you know, practicing in my mom's garage, and actually threw a couple of, you know, outdoor socially distanced electric shows, which is awesome, because I much prefer playing electric, you know, my backing tracks and all that kind of stuff. And we had a group of maybe, you know, 15 to 20 people come out, set up their lawn chairs. We live streamed the whole thing every time, promoted it, all that kind of good stuff. And it was a really, really cool kind of organic experience doing that. And then otherwise, you know, been toying with the idea of doing more live playing. But like I said, you know, I'm not as interested in playing, you know, the kind of stripped down acoustic stuff all the time right now, especially because it is kind of, you know, it's a saturated market and there are people out there that have, you know, these angelic voices that it's better suited for. I'm more interested in, you know, kind of the recording aspect and trying to, you know, build my audience, you know, using those different methods.
Oh, so maybe instead of, doing what some people are doing, which is they've pivoted to doing some live stream live shows. Are you thinking maybe of putting out a covers EP as a result of all this work at home?
That's kind of the plan. Yeah. The idea is to kind of, you know, as I said, I'm in video production. So, you know, all my songs end up getting music videos. I think it's also another way to keep, you know, the news cycle going for longer. Like we're planning on putting out a new music video every month until next April at this point off my LP. So, you know, every month, that's another way to engage fans, another way to kind of get a set of eyeballs on the entire record that may not have seen it in the first place. So very much into, you know, the marriage of video and music. And so for this, you know, covers thing, I've got 12 songs kind of mapped out that I've been working through and, nice. Going through some mixing right now. So the plan is to, you know, record some accompanying videos just in, you know, my bedroom here in Brooklyn and, you know, kind of do something creative with that to put those out over the span of time as well.
It's funny. I was going to ask this on my notes of things to ask was that you have, I think, like a really impressive collection of music videos. And that you work in video production now makes that make sense. But they are really well produced.
Thank you.
I'm very impressed. I really liked, I forgot the name already, but the one with the two women and the skateboarding and the art, the painting and all that stuff.
Oh yeah. Dance Like Shadows. That one's
Dance Like Shadows, which I don't remember hearing that actually in the song, but that was a really touching song and a really cool video. But what I wanted to ask was how important do you feel that music videos are in kind of the Spotify streaming era?
No, it's a great question. And, you know, I think for each artist, it's probably a different answer. You know, like I said, if you're an artist who can put out a TikTok video of you in your bedroom singing with an acoustic guitar or piano, or you're putting something on Instagram stories of that, someone's going to see it and they think, wow, this person has an amazing voice. I want to find them on Spotify. You know, for me, I know the kind of artist I am and, you know, I think if people are going to appreciate me, it's probably more for the songwriting, the production, just the varied genres that, you know, I'm drawn to in terms of the songs that I write and the records I produce. And, you know, for me, you know, as I said, we do a lot of campaigns targeted towards Spotify and that is definitely a big focus, but you know, if someone can find a video of mine on YouTube, they think the video is cool, they like the song, you know, odds are if they're, you know, that interested, they'll probably find me on Spotify as well. So I think that's kind of been the idea behind that. And that's kind of how we use Instagram as well too. You know, it's kind of creating thumb stopping content to kind of, you know, bring the consumer in. And then from there, you know, hopefully they want to take a bigger bite and they go to my Spotify page and stream the music, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. And I think while you have crossover of people who use different platforms, you also have segmented viewers or listeners. There's a lot of examples where, especially younger kids, you won't find them on Facebook.
Yep.
They're heavily into YouTube, but not so much Spotify.
Right.
And so you're reaching different people on different platforms too, and not just necessarily the same people across platforms.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that again, that kind of adds to the benefits of kind of having this multifaceted approach to what we're doing. You know, you want to bring in fans no matter what platform you're on. And that's the other thing too, that's such a big role is, you know, sample size. Like it's hard to make decisions about where you should be focusing your time if the sample size is too small. So, you know, the more content you get out on these platforms, you realize, okay, well, you know, based on the info that I'm getting from my Spotify listeners, my YouTube viewers, all this kind of stuff, you know, these are the demographics I'm you know, trending towards. Like, you know, my audience is 65% male between the ages of, you know, 22 and 30. You know, we want to find out what platforms those people are on and target it that way. You know, so again, it kind of goes back to that overall point that in today's day and age, it's a daunting task, but it's a really exciting opportunity where, you know, you can use the power of social to really find your audience and, you know, once you've got that audience, you can give them everything that they're craving from you in order to you know, make them a lifelong fan.
Yeah, I love that. That's absolutely fascinating. It sounds like you're really on top of all of this in terms of demographics. And I was going to mention earlier that it in this day and age, everybody who is an artist does seem to have to wear a lot of hats in terms of, you know, you have to be a social media manager, you have to be a statistics guy. And I don't know how much of that is really true in terms of every single person needs to know every single thing. It helps to have a team, I'm sure. But it sounds like you know more than a lot of people about this kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I can't take the full credit. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous for sure. But actually, you know, linking up with, I call her my manager. She's really just, you know, partner in crime and, you know, just someone who's also really, really hungry. But you know, recognized, you know, the music and was like, hey, I'm going to kind of help fill in the gaps. And she's the one who's, you know, revolutionized the way that we look at our, you know, our demographics and things like that. So what's an interesting opportunity for artists in today's day and age, you know, to your point, not all artists are built to wear every hat all the time. And I don't think, you know, to your point, you should. It'll take away from the quality of what makes you an artist. I think if you try to spread yourself too thin. But I mean, yeah. You know, there's so many, you know, students and people just out of college that, you know, went to school for social media marketing and, you know, digital advertising, all these things that, you know, I'm sure would jump at the opportunity to collaborate with an artist. So I think, you know, for artists out there that, you know, haven't kind of taken that step yet, you know, all it takes is, you know, just kind of doing a little bit of research and finding synergy with another person that, you know, can take that kind of stuff off your plate. And that way you can just focus on, you know, what you do well.
Excellent.
So what does your production, how do I say, what does your production process look like in recording your song and getting it out, publishing?
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of separate into two categories. There's the really professional stuff that I'm going to, you know, have out on Spotify and all that kind of stuff. And then there's, you know, my demo work. So they kind of translate into each other, but obviously the demo work kind of stops at a certain point. But you know, with the demo stuff, it's a varied process. It's either, you know, I write a song on the acoustic guitar and, you know, it's a very organic process. It's tried and true. And, you know, from there I'll start to imagine you know, where the drums will start, and then kind of figuring out, okay, what's the bass gonna do? Probably record a, you know, a guide guitar part to it. And then as soon as I kind of have the foundation there, you know, I'll either start kind of adding in all the fun bells and whistles, you know, coming up with the guitar melodies, adding in organ or different synthesizers, or, you know, maybe the song needs a mandolin, or kind of just starting to go off on that tangent. Or sometimes, you know, if the song already has a really strong vocal melody, you know, I'll lay down a demo vocal on top of it just quickly and then kind of build the other parts around that. Because I mean, as you guys know, the worst thing you can do is kind of be doing those two things in a parallel sense and then realize the melody of the vocal and the melody of the guitars is actually really disparate and it doesn't work anymore. You know what I mean? So
I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. But then I look at it this way. Now you have two songs.
No, I mean, that is the benefit for sure. So yeah, I mean, that's it part of time. And then other times too, you know, I'll just kind of start with, you know, a basic drum loop or something and start just messing around on the guitar, or I'll have, you know, a piano melody come to my head and start building the track from the ground up. And then eventually, you know, I'll write lyrics to it and kind of go from there. And like I said, you know, with my demos, I'll work on the demos as hard as I can, you know, make them as polished as possible, knowing that, you know, someday I'll probably bring them into a studio. And, you know, not having unlimited funds, it obviously behooves you to show up to the studio with your songs, you know, as close to, you know, filled out as possible. Right. So that, you know, you're not wasting time with the producer, or you're not spending time, you know, figuring stuff out that could have been figured out in the first place. But, you know, my favorite part about going to the studio I went to with my producer, Steve, was, you know, we were kind of on the same wavelength with how our, you know, thought process was. So I'd show up with a song that was probably, you know, 90% done, and immediately he would know, okay, we're going to do this for the other 10%. It's going to really elevate this to the next level. Perfect. And that's pretty much what happened on all 12 songs of my debut album. You know, I came in with a fairly well-formed demo, but then it was really that collaboration in the studio, you know, tightening things up, adding, you know, different instruments, pulling back on certain things, changing, you know, a chorus from, you know, full-time to halftime, you know, different things like that, that really creates that magic. And, you know, it's kind of what's so difficult about, you know, this whole pandemic is obviously there's the tech resources to record everything on your own, but it's that in-person kind of collaboration that really gets me excited about, and, you know, the songs that I'm working on that I'm, you know, feeling good about.
Yeah, totally.
And your album, it's The Past Romanticized?
Yes, sir. So it's a loose concept album for sure, as I feel like most of mine will be. It's so difficult, you know, because you have such different poles, you know what I mean? With, you know, on one side of it, there's the, you know, full concept album that's really baked out. It's, you know, like a rock opera or something that's really a well thought out concept. And then on the other end, it's, you know, a collection of 12 single would be singles, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I wanted to live right in the middle of that. And, you know, as they say, your first album is basically, you know, the greatest hits of whatever, from whatever period you started writing songs to what period you got to the studio. So when I was selecting the songs, though, there was definitely, you know, this theme throughout a lot of the lyrics and a lot of the feel to it, that it was going to be a journey through, you know, my past, but with that romanticized, you know, rose colored glass lens to it. And, you know, it kind of weaves its way through a lot of the songs and the sentiment. And, you know, there's one song called Long Way Home. That's kind of the centerpiece of all of it. That's where the title actually comes from the album. There's a line, running from a past that I romanticize in my head, forgoing any thought of accepting that it's dead. And there's this whole theme throughout the album of, you know, that kind of really difficult moment of turning your back on the past and walking towards that future confidently and not, you know, looking back too much. And I think that's kind of where that whole concept started to really feel good when I realized the collection of songs I had, and they all kind of in different ways pointed to that thematic.
Yeah. It's interesting how a theme can emerge once you kind of start. And I don't know, you know, if it's a chicken and egg thing where you either look back at what you've been writing and find a common thread, or it's just part of where you're at that time. And that's just how it comes out.
Right. Absolutely.
I will say that you have some really clever and touching lyrics. Like, you have this very, it's simple language. It's conversational, it's relatable. And yet every once in a while, you got this phrase that just goes, oh, that was a really good way to put that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I'm really hard on myself with the lyrics. I'm definitely self-aware at times. I'll you know, some of has stuff that hasn't come out yet. You know, I'll even reference the fact that I know that what I just said was a cliche, mm-hmm. but that's kind of the one thing I try to stay away from, is like, if I'm going to write a line, if it's going to be on my record, you know, I'm going to look at it. And if it sounds cliche, or if it isn't, at least, you know, somewhat self-knowing that I am singing a cliche at that time.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really sit well with me, especially because, you know, not to knock on, you know, other songs and other songwriters, but, you know, there's only so many ways you can say, you know, someone broke my heart, or I'm falling right. in love, or things like that. And, you know, what really gets me excited with that, you know, fire in my belly about music is finding those kind of clever new ways to say things. And, you know, you can look at a line and say, wow, that's never really been said in that way before. And that's what gets me. That's when I know I found something that I'm going to get excited about, is if I read a line and think, wow, you know, that kind of hasn't been said that way before. This is going to be, you know, kind of the centerpiece of the song or what have you.
Yeah, I think you definitely succeed there. And I write the same way. If I find myself tempted to use a cliche, I immediately subvert it, mm-hmm. or scratch it out and think of something else. But I saw on your website, or a website, that you've written like 1,500 songs. And yeah, practice will get you there. But so I wanted to ask how you got from 1,500 down to 12.
It wasn't
first album.
It honestly wasn't hard, because, you know, I found 1,400 ways how not to write a song.
Perfect.
It's funny though, like the progression. And it was, you know, when I was home, I, you know, stumbled upon all these, you know, hundreds of sheets of paper. And, you know, from the time I was 6 years old, I was just obsessed with Tom Petty. Like, my dad, my mom, massive Tom Petty fans. I was fortunate enough to go see him live, I think 10 times before he died. And ask me more about Tom Petty later. There's actually a fun story about him that showed up on my record, but I just wanted to be like Tom Petty from the time I was 5 years old. So I just started writing down song titles just on printed paper. So I have, you know, probably 20 albums worth of just song titles, and they're all terrible songs, like just silly, stupid songs. And then, you know, around age 8, I started writing just lyrics, and, you know, started out with a couple of my friends. We kind of had this little, you know, fake band or whatever, but we didn't really play anything. And I really got addicted to writing lyrics though. And, you know, spent the better part of like 6 or 7 years just writing pages and pages of lyrics. And I would have the melodies in my head, but I didn't really, you know, play guitar or anything at that time, and didn't really know how to play music at all. And I just knew that, you know, I had these kind of songs. And again, going back recently and reading them, they're all terrible. and then eventually, you know, got a guitar, started to teach myself how to play, you know, really started learning about recording in garage band in like, you know, early high school. And then, you know, from there, I probably recorded like, got like 700, 800 demos, just, you know, using loops, you know, not knowing how to, you know, use the synthesizer bass with my keyboard, just like really, really rudimentary, but it was really formative and just continuing to kind of flush out all the bad songs and learn, okay, you know, 95% of this was bad, but you did this one little thing right. Let's hang on to that. And then, you know, in college is kind of when I think I hit a period of time where I wrote 12 songs and, you know, one of them actually ended up on my record, which is Sleep the Lights On. And, you know, from there, I was kind of like, okay, you know, I am actually getting better at this. Let's start to really focus on the craft more. So, you know, all in all, I had a ton to choose from for the first album, but, you know, these 12 really overall were probably the cream of the crop, from the material I was, you know, focused on, but, you know, there's so many demos that are just sitting on my laptop that, you know, maybe one day when there's the demand for them, hopefully I'll put them out. But yeah, there's just so much material to work through over time. And, you know, it may have taken longer than I anticipated, but I'm really thankful for that process and, you know, going through all that terrible songwriting to get to where I am now.
That's very relatable, except for the writing lyrics at 9. I was not doing that at all.
Well, they weren't good lyrics, so don't sweat it.
Well, maybe for a 9-year-old they were, you know? So it sounds like you're kind of a one-man band. We didn't really talk about your... you know, how your origins and how you play and whether you have a band and all that stuff. Can you just touch on that for a second?
Yeah, I mean, I played in a couple of bands in high school, but honestly, you know, I was playing with musicians that were far and away better than me. And, you know, that wasn't really my bag. You know, I was much more content being behind the scenes at my house, just recording. You know, I've always just been obsessed with the idea of recording music. And, you know, over time, you know, I bought myself a bass. So I track, you know, the bass on my demos, you know, started collecting guitars, all that kind of stuff. So when I went to the studio with you know, my producer Steve, who is also a multi-instrumentalist and, you know, very similar background to mine, we hit it off immediately and we basically just played the entire album, just me and him. You know, he played some guitar on it, he played some banjo on Perfume, which was awesome because I was like, you know, we need some banjo on this song. And he was really hesitant at first. And I think it's one of my favorite, you know, pieces on the entire record. And nice. You know, I had the bass parts right now, but he's a phenomenal bass player. So he actually played all the bass on the album, and just, you know, some amazing grooves that he kind of came up with. And, you know, we traded off solos here and there. I've got a more, you know, rhythmic kind of style to my guitar playing when I play, you know, anything. And he's got more of the, you know, Guitar Hero style playing ability to him. So it was really fun, and it was a really good experience too, though, to have someone else, you know, take the reins for certain parts of songs and not have it have to be me all the time. And, you know, that really benefited a lot of the songs that would not have been as good if I hadn't, you know, had someone else to collaborate with on it.
Cool.
So I was wondering, given this year that we have had, what would you say has been like the most important thing that you've changed or that you've done to adapt to the situation that we're in with your music?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think honestly, you know, treating music, this is going to sound, you know, not inspired, but treating music almost like, you know, a workout routine. You know, just really committing myself to doing just the little things and getting them to be muscle memory on certain things, just knowing that, you know, when this is all over, I want to, you know, unleash the reins, so to speak. Like, you know, going out to my mom's garage and practicing for 2 hours a night, 6 days a week for 3 months straight. You know, I was fairly well rehearsed before the pandemic happened, and I had a bunch of gigs lined up. But, you know, in retrospect, like, I needed that time to really, really hone in and make sure everything was tight. And that you get to that point, as you, I'm sure you guys know, is, you know the set so well, you can really start to kind of expand and kind of be more playful and have these spontaneous moments come up when you're not worried about singing that note right or making sure you're hitting that solo right. And you can really, you know, blossom more as an artist. And I found myself getting to that point by committing myself like a workout routine every single night, going to that garage and practicing. So, and you know, that's translated to other parts of the music thing too. Like I said, I have a hard time sitting still, and I like making sure I'm always making progress on a daily basis. And the other lesson of that though too is, as you, I'm sure you guys know as well, like, you know, there are days where you just don't have it. And you also have to be okay with that too. Like, if there's a day where, you know, you can't get out of bed, you can't pick up that guitar, you know, not getting down on yourself for falling into that, because it's not a negative at all. It's, you know, the human psyche is a fragile thing, and you need to, you know, you need to build around it well and make sure that it's, you know, taken care of well. So it, in a nutshell, just kind of really, you know, just learning a lot about, you know, loving the process and also, you know, loving the downtime too.
Yeah, I love all that. Definitely give yourself some grace on those tougher days.
Absolutely.
You better hit us with that Tom Petty story as we're getting close to time here.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, the last song on the record is called American Slang. And it is unequivocally my ode to Tom Petty. I mean, so my dad unfortunately tragically passed away when I was six and, you know, kind of growing up without any real male father figures, I kind of was drawn to Tom. And, you know, it sounds weird when I tell it, but he was, you know, the most prominent male figure in my life growing up. And, you know, I'm just obsessed with his records, but obsessed with, you know, the way he lived too, you know, taking on the record industry multiple times and all the great other people he collaborated with across the board. So, you know, when he died suddenly, it was, you know, number one, it was like losing my dad all over again, but just losing, you know, this father figure I had. So, you know, kind of wanted to write a song for him, and it's symbolic in a lot of ways. It's, you know, the chord progression in it, very similar chord progression to my favorite song, which is Learning to Fly. There are numerous references to, you know, his lyrics in there. The song is about a girl, but it's actually Tom personified as a girl, and the whole story about, you know, leaving Florida and the, you know, the mom that gone too soon and the dad that was really abusive and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I found it really symbolic that, you know, Tom ended his debut record, which came out when he was 26. I was 26 when it came out, with a song called American Girl, obviously. So it felt really symbolic for me to end my record with American Slang. And then, you know, we don't need to get into religious beliefs or spirituality here, but, you know, nothing proved it to me more than, you know, waking up on my release day and seeing that Tom's estate had released that demo of You Don't Know How It Feels. Nice. So in the end, I ended up sharing my album release day with Tom Petty, which is just, you know, I'll just leave you guys with that right there.
Very cool.
I'll leave it with that, you know, and it just cool. feels, I felt very, very humbled and just very, you know, just grateful to have, you know, had him be that massive part of my life for so long, and it continues to be, obviously, because his music lives on. But yeah, that's the Tom Petty story.
I love that.
Yeah,
me too. It's a very difficult thing, I think, even the inspiration and all the emotion that comes out of it, but it's a very difficult thing to decide when you're done writing that song, whoever it's for.
Yeah, because you always want it to be, you know, indicative of what whatever that thing was that's not there meant to you. You know what I mean? And it's impossible to put that into words in a way that you feel is satisfying. So, I mean, that song is, you know, on its own merits. I think it still haunts me for that reason, because I think, you know, it's still not good enough. It's still not, you know, representative of what it meant,
it's like,
you know?
It's like it's going to get remade one day or something. You know, there's more to it that you want to put. That's how I feel anyway.
Yep.
I just continually have more ideas that I think, man, I should have maybe added that or
absolutely
talked about this or sung about that.
Yeah,
once you start playing it live, you'll be able to evolve it in your live shows.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Actually,
new spins to it.
Yeah, I played you know, me and my electric guitar when I did one of those, you know, kind of socially distanced concerts at in my mom's place. And I actually played it on 4th of July because I was like, here's a song I wrote with the word America in it. And played it just me and my guitar. And it was, you know, it was like hearing the song for the first time again, or writing it for the first time. It was a really different yet, you know, very cathartic kind of experience too. So I think you're dead on with that. You know, there's always going to be evolutions to these songs because, you know, that feeling's not just going to go away when you write your next record or you go on your next tour or anything like that, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that ties in with all that practice that you did and that level of familiarization and intimacy that you have with your set and that freedom that you expressed. You know, that's that point where you have put in the work and have built the foundation where you're able to then explore improvisation and expand out. And then really creatively work with the music that you've written.
Absolutely. And that way it can evolve, you know, in perpetuity. You know, it never has to be the same song again if you don't want it to be, because you've got that foundation and you can really, to your point, you know, really expand on it.
Yeah. It's your song.
Yeah.
Right.
That it is.
So I wanted to make sure we had time to tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can find your music and your videos.
Absolutely. DK Lyons Music. So it's D.K.LYONS. And that you can find me on Instagram, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, all the like. As mentioned, you know, dropped my debut record back in June, but we've got music videos coming out every month for every song. It's going to kind of build to a bigger project down the line that I'll save for another date. But yeah, appreciate anyone that goes out and listens, and I hope you enjoy it.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll definitely be sharing some of that stuff.
I appreciate it.
And we'll make sure and put that information into the show notes as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, I really
appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you guys. This has been, you know, fantastic. I really appreciate all the work you guys do, and this has been great.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you. A lot of insights in this one.
Glad to hear it. You guys stay safe and look forward to the next podcast.
All right.
All right. Thanks. You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yep.
Have a great week.
Cheers.
Cheers. Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.